should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts gonna dress in drag. Only a fool in here thinks he's got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge, lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. Locked in tight, my reign. Used to care, but things have changed. I've been walking 40 miles of bad road. Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some days are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, my brain. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone, not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in late. I'm not that eager to make that mistake. Some people are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, it's rolled back around again this Monday. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 30th of July, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 7 minutes after 8 a.m. Arizona time. I'll continue with our block of instruction about General Grievous on guerrilla warfare in Cyprus and the political uses of terrorism and the errors of the British strategy. Have some border news. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com, and that's altabib762@hotmail.com. thanks for taking the time to tune in today. As always, we're sending this one out to Lily, Grace, Antoinette. If you'd like to participate in today's broadcast, telephone is 712-432-0900. 712-432-0900. And the mechanical voice comes on, ask you for the room number, 957-464, and the pound sign. And then to unmute your phone, you can press star 6. And, you know, usually about halfway through the year, we start to ask for helping meet the end of the year or the beginning of next year's bill, however you'd like to call that here on Liberty Tree Radio. So all the contact information is at the website. I think, what's that, libertytreeradio.4mg.com, something like that. It shouldn't be that difficult to search around for it to find out the information if you would like to help contribute. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Also, just for those that might just be new listeners, this is a one-hour broadcast on Liberty Tree Radio on Mondays, and then we switch over on Thursday and Friday on the Micro Effect. Starts at the same time, but it's a two-hour block of instruction. This part on this broadcast on Liberty Tree Radio generally tries to help bring people, new listeners, up to speed on our subject of insurgency, on not only what it is and how it is, but individual case studies on why some were effective and some were ineffective, and the standard tactics, if you will, that the insurgents use, and the knee-jerk reaction that the government responds. Oftentimes, they're not very well thought out. The British, who armed their commandos with knives and instruct them to kill from the rear, protested vigorously when such tactics were applied to themselves. Oh, it may be argued that these things are only permissible in war. This is nonsense. I was fighting a war in Cyprus against the British, and if they did not recognize the fact from the start, they were forced two at the end. The truth is that our form of war, in which a few hundred fell in 4 years, was more selective than most. And I speak as one who has seen battlefields covered with dead. We did not strike, like the bomber, at random. We shot only British servicemen who would have killed us if they could have fired first, and the civilians who were traitors or intelligence agencies. To shoot down your enemies in the streets may be unprecedented, but I was looking for results, not precedents. How did Napoleon win his victories? He took his opponents in the flank or rear, and what is right on the grand scale is not wrong when the scale is reduced and the odds against you are 100 to 1. The words are from memoirs of the EOKA leader, George Grievous, the subject terror. Now, although Grievous is the archetype of a conservative military man, a jingo and a fascist in the eyes of the Greek communist, his philosophy as terrorism approaches that of the anarchist. The state exercises authority by the use of threat of force, argue the anarchist. The policeman on the corner is the agent as well as the symbol of it, and the revolver at his side is there to intimidate or, in extremity, to kill those who resist him. If then his authority is illicit, being exercised without the just consent of the governed, it is not right and natural to oppose force with force, to kill policemen as one would kill bandits, and to combat usurpers as one would combat an invasion. Now, in effect, this was the reasoning that led Grievous, a Greek Cypriot, to declare war on the British rulers of Greek and Turkish Cyprus. Now, in his memoirs, he writes that it was, quote, with deep regret, but with a high sense of duty, end quote, that he took up arms in 1955 against an old friend and ally, Britain. He blames not the British people, but a band of politicians who denied even the hopes of freedom to Cyprus, and he adds, quote, it is on their heads that the guilt rests for the death of so many men, women, and children in the tragic years that followed, end quote. Now, the beginning of the Cypriot struggle for the independence was announced March 31, 1955, by a series of explosions across the island. Saboteurs raided the government radio station in Nicosia, set off bombs that wrecked the broadcasting equipment and lifted the roof from the building, causing damage estimated at 60,000 British pounds sovereign. Bombs were thrown into government office buildings and into wireless installations at the Wolseley Barracks, headquarters of a British military force, which at that time numbered only 4,000 men. In the port of Limassol, a power plant and the two main police stations were bombed. At Larnaca, the police headquarters and courts and the British commissioner offices were shattered by bomb blasts. The first casualty of the campaign occurred in Famagusta. A member of an EOKA group was electrocuted when he threw a damp rope over a high-tension power line in an attempt to sabotage the electrical supply. The attack took the world by surprise. Colonial officials were stunned and panic-stricken, says Grievous. The wave of bombing attacks was coupled with more general political actions. Young students and schoolchildren were rapidly recruited into the independent movement. I intended to turn the youth of Cyprus into the seedbed of EOKA, writes Grievous. And a series of successful demonstrations was organized, sufficiently violent to drive police from the streets and successful to require the use of soldiers to restore order. Children as young as 10 years old were used to distribute EOKA flyers and to act as couriers. Teachers who interfered in disregard of the organization's warning were punished severely. A phrase that, as Grievous employed it, usually meant shooting by EOKA execution squads. Pressure was put on Cypriot newspapers that were slow to take the right tone with regard to the campaign. For example, newspapers that failed to denounce the passage of repressive laws. Those of weak spirit soon felt the weight of the EOKA boycott. A wave of terrorism had been initiated by an extremely small group of men, not more than 80, according to Grievous, organized into sabotage squads of 5 or 6 in all of the provincial cities and towns of the island. There were, as yet, no guerrilla units, although Grievous has personally reconnoitered the island, making notes of favorable places for ambush, terrain suitable to provide bases for guerrilla action, and so on. The excellent network of roads across the island militated against an extensive guerrilla campaign. And most of those who were to fight as guerrillas were not sent into the countryside until they had outlived their usefulness in the towns by becoming too well known to risk being seen in the streets. The mountains of Kairima Range and the heavily wooded Todos Range in the southwest were, however, subsequently used as bases of guerrilla operations and for the training of sabotage teams. After the first breakout of bombings, there was a lull in the terror campaign, broken for some weeks only by isolated attacks against what Grievous calls targets of opportunity. One of these, according to the memoirs, was Sir Robert Armitage, the British governor of Cyprus. As part of Empire Day celebrations in Nicosia, the governor attended a film premiere at the Palace Cinema. He sat throughout the showing for 2 hours, only a few feet from a seat under which a small pencil attached to a Coca-Cola bottle filled with explosives slowly burned. The picture ended. The governor's party left the theater. 5 minutes later, the bomb exploded, shattering 7 rows of vacant seats and riddling the ceiling with shrapnel. Grievous spent the time between attacks traveling about Nicosia and on occasion into the Kyrenia Mountains, giving orders to group leaders, supervisor training, preparing propaganda releases, and generally bolstering morale by his appearance. His identity as Digenis, D-I-G-H-E-N-I-S, my Greek's not that good, and that translates to the leader. The way in which he invariably signed his communiques had already been revealed. The small Cypriot Communist Party has denounced EOKA as hooligans and pop gun wielders. The party line recalls that taken in Cuba when the communists denounced Fidel Castro and the supporters as bourgeoisie, pushtunists. Now, taking the same cue, the leader of the Greek Communist Party disclosed in a broadcast from Moscow that Digenis was Grievous, well known to the communists as the leader of the Greek underground organization of World War II called XHI, XI, and later as the commander of the Greek army operations against communist guerrillas of ELAS in the Greek Civil War. Now, comically, the British did not take this piece of information seriously, recalls Grievous. The idea of an elderly retired officer as the leader of the EOKA was too strange for them to accept. Digenis continued to move about freely in the thin disguise of dark glasses and a clipped mustache. For a time, he established headquarters in the mountains, but later, he relates, he hid in a house in Limassol for 2 years without being discovered or betrayed. EOKA's second wave of attacks came in June. The first victim of the campaign was a policeman killed when a bomb blew a hole in the wall of the divisional police headquarters in Nicosia. 16 men were wounded. A sergeant was killed when a assault group attacked the Amaindos police station, and several other stations were attacked. Grievous had personally selected the target. The commander-in-chief of the British Land Forces in the Middle East, General Knightley, who was accustomed to drive daily in the capital from his home on the Kyrenia coast, quote, "I found a good place for an ambush on the pass over the Karima Mountains," writes Grievous. But a good place for an ambush, but Archbishop Makiros vetoed the plan, and the idea was abandoned, end quote. Now, the memoirs revealed that Makarios vetoed the good many places proposed by the leader and often dragged his feet when Grievous would have forged boldly ahead. Now, the archbishop held the prestigious and the purse strings without funds, the Grievous was unable to proceed and was forced to reconsider some of his more drastic schemes, as, for example, when he wished to send execution squads to London to assassinate known Cypriot informers living in Britain on the rewards of their betrayals. Now, in general, however, the campaign proceeded as Grievous wished it to, with the leader maintaining a rigid discipline over his scattered troops of terrorists and saboteurs, quote, I issued frequent warnings that I alone would give orders. Disobedience would be punished by death, end quote. Although Grievous says that at the onset, he would have been able, given 500 armed men, to drive the British into the sea. The remark is not to be taken seriously. From the start, he saw very clearly that his victory would be political rather than military. This is made clear in the general plan, which he drew up in Athens 2 years after the first bomb exploded in Nicosia. Number one, the objective. To arouse international public opinion, especially amongst the allies of Greece, by deeds of heroism and self-sacrifice, which will focus attention on Cyprus until our aims are achieved. The British must be consistently harried and beset until they are obliged by international diplomacy exercised through the United Nations to examine the Cyprus problem and to settle it with accordance with the desires of the Cypriot people and the whole Greek nation. Number two, the procedure. Activity will be aimed at causing so much confusion and damage in the ranks of the British forces as to make it manifest abroad that there are no longer in complete control of the situation. The campaign will be carried out on three fronts. One, sabotage against government installations and military posts. Two, attacks on British forces by a considerable number of armed fighting groups. And number three, organization of passive resistance by the population. Because of the difficulties in the way of the large-scale guerrilla campaign, the main weight of the campaign will be placed on sabotage, and therefore the chief task of the fighting group will be to support and cover the work of the saboteurs by upsetting and diverting the government forces. Success will not be achieved by minor and intermittent attack, but only by a continuous campaign aimed at getting important results. And it should not be supposed that by these means we should expect to impose a total material defeat on the British forces. Our purpose is to bring about a moral defeat by keeping up the offensive until the objectives stated in the first paragraph of this plan are realized. By the end of June 1955, the second phase of the campaign had ended. EOKA fighters were informed in a bulletin that the material results had not been up to the expectations of the leader. There had been few casualties, and the damage caused by the sabotage had been relatively insignificant from the economic point of view. Presumably, it was this to which Grievous referred when he spoke of material results. Now, in political terms, however, the EOKA campaign had already achieved a considerable measure of success. Now, the primary purpose of the organization was being realized. And the issue of self-determination for Cyprus had been called dramatically into the attention of the world. British public opinion, in particular, had been aroused, and with the anticipated results, the policy of the government that had said it would never consider Cyprus independence, Cyprus supposedly being indispensable to British military security in the Mediterranean, was being questioned, and there were already second thoughts about the word never. Now, 2 years earlier, the British had refused to discuss Cyprus with the Greek government. Now, the Prime Minister Sir Anthony Eden, sent an invitation to both Athens and Ankara to attend a tripartite conference in London. Archbishop Makarios, seeking a larger forum and a better solution than he could be expected from any such meeting, flew to Athens to press the Greek government to appeal to the United Nations. Before leaving, he sent Grievous his congratulations, adding, quote, EOKA has contributed in infinitely more to the Cyprus struggle than 75 years of paper war. The name of Deganis is an enigma to the British, and it is a legend as well. Already, it has passed into the pages of the liberation movement's history. Grievous was preparing a general attack timed to coincide with the meeting of the United Nations General Assembly in the fall, and as an initial step, he proposed to put the native police force out of action as a reliable law enforcement agency so as to compel the British to extend their military forces, which were being used mainly to guard government buildings or held in their barracks for riot duty and similar emergencies. Oh, you see, we're up at the bottom of the hour here and got the music coming in here any time now. And that was from an order dated June 28th, and he informed the EOKA group leaders that the aim of our next offensive will be to terrorize the police and to paralyze the administration, both in the towns and the countryside. Sounds like they got everybody joining together with the band. That's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about guns. It's about politics, agitation, getting the people behind you. We'll be right back. Question is, are you going to join together with the band?
Sure.
Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, that went by fast. What a difference 24 hours can make. Good morning. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today is the 30th of July, 2018, and it's a Monday. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. The question is, are you willing to join together with the band? Today, we're discussing another aspect on the island of Cyprus in the Mediterranean and General Grievous's campaign, his insurgency, to drive the British away. Because he never really, quote-unquote, defeated the British, but he just made it too costly for them, and they realized for what dividend they were collecting out of Cyprus, it wasn't worth it, and they eventually left. It's kind of the same thing that had happened in Cuba, a relatively small amount of people. What was that? I think the Fidelistas at any one time only numbered a couple hundred thousand, and Batista had employed 20,000 troops looking for him. Discussed this the other day. I got a call from somebody talking about strategy, tactics, etc., and about the numbers and the ratios of how, you know, 10 to 1, 1 to 10, how one insurgent can tie down 10, 20, 50, 100 people, and then the government security forces has to send hundreds and hundreds of people to root out the difference between strategy and tactics, what you're trying to achieve. But another main goal of, or a point that we're trying to make here on this broadcast, and it's something that I hammer on over and over again, in an insurgency, the strategic terrain is the population, because the government and the insurgents are competing for the support of the population. Indiscriminate terror has never been a friend to an insurgent group. But when it's applied correctly, it can be extremely effective. Being that we have a very limited amount of time, that I'm not sure if I'm going to go into it, and to border on heresy, I don't know. In terrorism, the terrorists have two targets. One is against the people that they directly carry the attack out against. And two, it sends a signal as a secondary target of the fence setters or the potential, the underground or the helpers of the insurgent movement. Now here's where I slip over. And if that's a big word, middle word in life, if we remove a lot of the, and just look at just the tactics and the strategy that was being attempted without getting too religious into our discussion. But let's look in our Bible back to Exodus. You had Moses and Aaron, and God told Moses, go talk to Pharaoh. Say, let my people go, and if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen to you. And of course, Moses or Pharaoh hardened his heart. And a lot of the initial problems, the plagues that were occurring in Egypt, didn't necessarily affect the people. You know, their crops failed, their cattle died. Indirectly, it affected the people, but not directly. And then there was the water turned to blood, and the the dust that settled on the Egyptians, and their skin broke out in boils, and then it was this, and then it was that, over and over again, let my people go. And then eventually it came over to, yeah, I'm going to kill all the firstborn. I'm going to take this message directly to the people of Egypt. And every time that the small place where the Israelites were, they weren't affected by the plagues and the famine and the dying off of their cattle or anything like that. And, of course, they were warned ahead of time to slaughter the lamb and place the blood over the door so the death angel would pass over. And now, in the Bible, we don't necessarily hear, we hear that there was wailing and gnashing of teeth in the countryside, but there's not a whole lot of narrative of the response from the Egyptian people. Most of the exchange in Exodus has to do with God, Moses, Aaron, and Pharaoh over and over again. Oh, there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but not a whole lot. And I point this out, and once again, what I'm trying to get to, and I don't know if we could say God was the first terrorist in the world, but he certainly used the tactics effectively. Well, if you don't do what I want, this is what's going to happen to you. Oh, no, and Pharaoh hardened his heart, and golly, Sergeant Carter, God did what he told him he was going to do. And Pharaoh kind of started to give in, and then after all of a sudden, then the plague was lifted, and then he hardened his heart again and went back. So we have God carrying out a quote-unquote terrorist attack against Pharaoh and the Egyptian people, directly and indirectly, and just kept up in the ante, harden the heart, up the ante, harden the heart, up the ante. And so there is, back to our point here of about that there's always two targets. Now we have to ask, who was Pharaoh afraid of? There's nothing in the Bible that says. Now, obviously, God, or Pharaoh didn't fear God, and obviously he didn't fear Moses, didn't fear Aaron, he didn't fear the Israelites. And again, there's no writing of, was Pharaoh in fear of the people rising up? Now, of course, the Pharaoh was viewed as a god. I guess they never asked that if these people are gods, why did we build all these pyramids and put their bodies in there? If they're gods, they wouldn't die. They would live forever, but we just got to get another Pharaoh. But anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. You know, sometimes, again, when our study has to do with military stuff, as an example, World War II, and we're doing a study or an analysis of a comparison between the German army and the Russian army. We talk about their planes or their tanks or their infantry or their guns or how good their boots were and how far they would be able to walk before their boots would wear out, kind of like the intelligence preparation of the battlefield or the area study, to be familiar with the terrain, not only the geographical terrain, but the human terrain, the politics, demographics, the economics, that way. But then when we look at the tactics that are employed, we can bog down into sitting here going, well, but you see, these guys, they were the Nazis, and these guys were the commies, and we bog down into the political aspect and not necessarily casting aside the politics and looking at it strictly by numbers. Now, of course, as Major General Lansdale would say, that there's the X factor in the unknown variable, because we can, when he met with Robert Strange McNamara, the Secretary of Defense during Vietnam, WizKid and all his computer people that were crunching the numbers, and, well, if we do this and we do that and our stuff's this and our stuff's that, and obviously we'll. And then he went in to meet with McNamara and pointed out, and he was saying, oh, but you see, there's this deal on here, and it's like, well, what do we call it? And we call it the X factor. So McNamara penciled that in, and as they were, oh, explain that to me. And then McNamara didn't like that because it was an unknown variable and threw all his computer calculations off. And so he attempted to erase that term, X factor. But that's what it has to do with, the X factor. What was Pharaoh afraid of? Obviously, he wasn't afraid of Moses. He wasn't afraid of God. He wasn't afraid of the Israelites. They were already in bondage. But was he afraid of the Egyptian people rising up against him? I don't know. I don't know. But again, God used the tactics of insurgency, and more specifically, terrorism, very effectively. He used that directly against Pharaoh, because he was the head man in charge, and the people would hold him responsible because he hardened his heart and wouldn't let the Israelites go. And they had the blood and the water and the plague and the locusts and et cetera, culminating into the death of all the firstborn. Constantly ratcheting up and escalation. But did God have a secondary target? The Israelites. Just as an example in history, maybe the terrorists have did a little bit of study on what happened over there so many years ago in Egypt. Harden my heart. The government is immovable, kind of like what was going on with General Grievous. The British hardened their heart, wouldn't give Cyprus their independence. And he just kept ratcheting it up and ratcheting it up. Just some food for thought. Now, of course, I've not gotten any emails from people that listen to today's broadcast, or since we've been on since the 8th of January of this year, to ALTHABEB762@hotmail.com. And now all of a sudden I'm going to get 10,000 of them saying I'm some heretic, and how dare I insinuate that God was the first terrorist. Well, if we remove the religion from it and just look at it as the tactics, techniques, and procedures of what's trying to be achieved and the methods that are utilized, and what's the, if you will, the target audience, what's the primary target and what's the secondary target, and there's good possibility that God had a tertiary target too in this aspect, because when the, after all the goats and the cattle of the Egyptians died, but that little place where the Israelites were at, none of their livestock died. So was that a tertiary target sent by God to say, I'm going to protect you? But now, and I ain't going to turn this into some sermon on Exodus, but there's a whole, the deal about the stiff-necked people, that they could see these miracles going on before their eyes and they still didn't believe. And as soon as they left and got across the Red Sea, they built a big calf while Moses was up getting the Ten Commandments on the mountain. And God said that these people turn back to their wicked ways and they're stiff-necked people. I'm going to go down there and utterly destroy them. And Moses entered into negotiation with God and said, let me go down there first. And yep, drunken debauchery, built the big golden calf, worshiping the calf. And there was a whole bunch of stuff that had gone there. They were grumbling before they barely even got let out after Passover. Oh, aren't there enough graves in Egypt? You're going to come out here and kill us too, to let us die off? You got Pharaoh pursuing us from over here. The Red Sea in front of us, we're going to get caught between these two. We're all going to die out here. Complaining. But they, for some reason, they couldn't see the pillar of smoke in the day and the pillar of light leading them. I wonder where that came from. Stiff-necked people. They just don't believe. And maybe that was the tertiary target, because they had certainly seen the water turn to blood and the boils and the locusts and the livestock dying off and the Passover and the death of the firstborn. But for some reason, they still didn't believe either. That's maybe a little bit of food for thought for today's broadcast. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. And so sometimes the template has already been laid out. There's no sense in trying to reinvent the wheel. And sometimes we can just open our Bible and look at these examples of what has happened, of all the way from the commander-in-chief all the way down to the lowly foot soldier. You got your marching orders and how it's done, how it's carried out. Now, in the first part of today's broadcast, we're talking about a General Grievous on guerrilla war in Cyprus. And you still have quite a bit of information there, because we talked about the aim of the offensive to terrorize the police and to paralyze the administration, both in the towns and the countryside. And if that aim is achieved, the results will be threefold. Disillusionment will spread throughout the police force so rapidly that most of them, they will not actually help, will turn a blind eye to our activities. Active intervention of the army and security, which will stretch the troops and tire them out. The falling morale of the army will also influence its leaders. And in the face of our strength and the persistence and the trouble they cause, it is very probable that the United Nations, through member countries who take an interest in Cyprus affairs, will seek to bring about a solution. Is that the primary, the secondary, or the tertiary target on what was going on? And the results that they want to be obtained, the murderous attacks against policemen who are out of sympathy with our aims, or who try to hunt us down. Number two, ambushes against police patrols in towns or raids on country police stations. Number three, obstructing free movement of the police across the island by laying ambushes against individuals or groups. Once again, what is your target? It's a political upheaval in a controlled fashion. It's just not willy-nilly violence. Just got a couple of minutes left here. If you would like to contact Robert Miner, his telephone is 701-251-2365. 701-251-2365. Message comes on if you'd like to talk to him directly. leave a message or by phone card, and then it'll ask you to key in the first three digits of his last name, 646, and then it'll ask you to leave a name, say, oh, this message is for Robert Miner. This is Mike in Arizona land, thinking about you, Bob. Hang in there. We're helping you out. You're in our prayers, etc. You got about 7-10 seconds to give that message out. If you'd like to send him a letter, maybe just some news items to keep him up to date on what's going on, it's Robert Miner, M-I-N-E-R, and that's S-C-C-C, 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401, Robert Miner, and that's S-C-C-C, so that would translate phonetically to Sierra, Charlie, 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 205 6th Street, Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. Now remember, we're starting that middle of the year fund drive for Liberty Tree Radio. If you find this information valuable and the broadcasts helpful, then it's your responsibility to help keep Liberty Tree Radio on the air. I'd like to say thanks for tuning in today. I got quite a bit of more border information. I'd like to get out at least maybe one or two of these. This first one is from cbp.gov/newsroom, 18 July 2018, Tucson, Arizona. Two men with violent criminal histories have been arrested after illegally entering into the United States. U.S. Border Patrol agents from Sonoyta Station apprehended 57-year-old Reynaldo Ciro Duran from El Salvador after he illegally crossed the border west of Sonoyta Friday night. A records check on Duran revealed several convictions in California to include animal cruelty, assault, and molestation of a minor in 2016. Duran has previously served more than 500 days in prison for his crimes. On Tuesday evening, agents from the Brian A. Terry Station encountered 33-year-old Arnoldo Rene Augustin from Guatemala after he legally entered the United States. A record check revealed a 2012 Berkeley County, South Carolina conviction for sexual exploitation of a minor, an attempted lewd act on a child for which he served 6 years in prison. Both men federal custody, be presented criminal history, blah, blah, blah. If you have information and concern, please call. Yeah, yeah, you got it.
Mike.
Yes.
Good morning. This is
Good morning.
Jim from the Illinois, man.
Yeah, baby.
Anyway, I want to say thank you for everything you do, the time you take in the preparation and the time it takes to do your presentment on the air. The Art of War, yeah. The gospel, or as most people think, call it that Bible, or I will call it the organic law of mankind, is a place to study the art of war also, along with many other things.
Excuse me, please. One second. Before we got like 2 minutes left, I just want to get a yay or a nay, but when we came back from the bottom of the break, that I pointed out that God was the first terrorist in the world and used the example of Exodus. Are you with me on that, or you kind of understand, or are you going to
I follow you, man. He laid out the plan, and if people don't study this the gospel, God's spell, his word, then you are missing out a great deal of the history of mankind and his relationship with mankind and his relationship with the Creator. Now, whoever you call your Creator, as you understand him, that's your business, or if you don't. And I got no problem with that. Just as long as you're not doing any harm, you respect my property, I respect yours. Sun Tzu, he who will win, who prepared himself, waits to take the enemy unprepared. And that's exactly what it is, man. You can't go into this thing as a berserker, you know. You have got to be able to think, and to think and use the weapons that you have, and your mind is your primary weapon. So as
Amen.
Your spirit is, so shall your thoughts be led, and your thoughts will lead your body or your actions, you know. I thank you, Mike. I just say be well, and blessings of liberty to you and everybody else out there listening. And, Ed, thanks a lot for getting the archives going there. You know, I know it's a lot of work, but thank you, sir. All right. Have a good day, Mike.
Hey, God bless you. Thanks for taking the time to tune in and call. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. Straight from my lips to the listeners there. God is the first terrorist. He set the example. Wow, that's really out there. When was the last time you heard a pastor deliver a sermon like that? Well, that sounds like the end of our broadcast. This was the 30th of July, 2018. It's a Monday. As always, we send this broadcast out to Lily, Grace, Antoinette. Tell your friends. Help keep Liberty Tree Radio on the air. And I'll see you on Thursday over on the Micro Effect, and then back here on Monday. You're not getting this type of broadcast anywhere else. I tried to do my best. I put a lot of prep into this, and it's time for you people to step up to the plate. There's no such a thing as a free lunch. I'm out of here. You guys take care.
Tight, my range, I used to care.
just don't show it. You can hurt someone, not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy